I'll go over that for the audience as well before we get into the first opening statement.
Yeah, just the only important part is when you're being cross-examined, you can't answer questions with questions.
Yeah, so
they do that in court all the time.
You would know.
Eric, we are going to hand it over to you now. And again, you have up to 10 minutes for an opening statement. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. So countless times I've seen Kent ask questions that he believes pose a challenge to evolution. You know, why this, why that? So let's say that hypothetically, Kent asks a question that somebody does not have an answer for. What is Kent's answer going to be? If it is a how question, how did something happen, this, that, or the other, Kent's answer will be God did it. It's not how God did it. It's just the claim that God did it. If it's a why question, Kent will say the same sort of thing, because God did it. That's not an answer or even an attempt to make an argument. It's simply a conclusion given in desperation. So I promise that tonight Kent will not give a single answer or reason or explanation for anything that we discuss. Kent will only give us his conclusions. Hopefully, at a few turns, if Kent's honest, he will at least say, I don't know. But the problem is the God hypothesis is fundamentally useless, which is the alternative explanation to evolution by natural selection and therefore common descent, which is the topic of our debate tonight. The God hypothesis can't answer any questions, and we know this because a God, the type of God Kent believes in, could have done literally anything. It has supposed unlimited abilities. So, did God create the world billions of years ago? That's absolutely a possibility. God could have done that. What about only 6,000 years ago? God could certainly have done that as well. God could have created the whole world an hour before this debate began. Kent thinks that the Bible proves that the answer is 6,000 years and that evolution doesn't take place and every organism was created pretty much as we see them today. But that's just question begging. According to Kent, Genesis is literal, the genealogies are reliable, and the beginning of everything goes back 6,000 years. If that's true, then there must be evidence, but there is zero evidence. For example, we can see billions of light years. That's really all you need to establish that that claim is false. So it's over right there. Kent will say something like, if God created a mature atom, then he can create a mature-looking universe, but that's not an explanation, it's a conclusion. If there was a way to date the universe, and the universe is 6,000 years old, then the only acceptable answer is 6,000 years. But since that's not what happened, now what we have to do is invent from nothingness the claim that God just did it that way and created a very young universe that is billions of light years across. And there's no evidence for that. It's just that Kent has to say that because that's the only way to preserve the conclusion that he already had. It's not an explanation. It's not an argument. It's not predicated on evidence. It's just an assertion. Now, I said all of that, but I don't want this topic is not about, you know, the age of the universe or anything like that. I only draw out that example as a way to explain the problem that we have here. So tonight, I hope that we only talk about biological evolution from this point on. I just give that example to illustrate the fallacy in Kent's reasoning. So at no point tonight, do I believe that Kent will use data to support what he believes in, apart from claiming that frogs give birth to frogs, as if that disproves evolution, which it does not. At no point will Kent be able to give an explanation for how or why God did anything. So it's just literally useless, whereas evolution has made successful predictions and has passed every single test that's ever come up. And we even use evolution or the concepts, the principles of evolution today, to do things like groundbreaking medical research. So it's incredibly useful and important. A lot of science, such as gravitational waves, is pretty much incomprehensible to almost everybody. But it's only flat earthers that say stuff like it's fake. Kent has no problem with much of science, maybe even most science, but he claims evolution isn't science. It is, it's just that he has to say that because the evidence is overwhelming. Evolution, genetics, paleontology, geology, these fields all operate in accordance with the exact same scientific method that any of you watching, myself or Kent, we all take for granted all the time. Like, I don't even know how a microwave or a computer or a cell phone works, but I don't go around assuming that it's magic or claiming that it's fake or anything like that. Kent will call these things religions, which is just, it's almost too stupid to even deserve a response. But what I will say is that these fields of science, they make zero appeals to the supernatural. So not only are they not religions, but they by definition can't be religions ever. And then the final real quick point is that Kent actually believes in evolution and Kent believes in natural selection. Because Kent believes that thousands of years ago, an event that wiped out almost all life on Earth happened. And then today, all of the species we see today, which were not present on that arc, are the result of evolution and natural selection. Now, we disagree about how far it goes, and today we will be going over the evidence. I'm sure in Kent's cross-examinations, he'll be asking questions where that evidence will be relevant and get brought up. But for now, that's where things stand. That's my opening statement.
All right. Thank you very much, Eric, for that opening statement, our first opening statement for tonight's debate. For anybody in the chat just joining us, we will be doing an audience Q&A once we're done with the main portion of tonight's debate. So please, if you do have a question, make sure you're sending those in. Challenges, objections, perhaps as well. We'll interact with those. Okay, Kent, we're going to hand it over to you now. And you have up to 10 minutes for an opening statement. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. Tonight, we're going to see that we live in two different worlds. There's the real world, things we can observe, study, test. And then there's the world of imagination called Planet Peterson. We've already demonstrated some of that tonight in his opening. He has a wild imagination, and we shall see. In the real world, cows have baby cows. That is what we call science. Mm-hmm. It's observable, it's testable, it's demonstrable. That's the definition of science. On Planet Peterson, cows came from an amoeba over billions of years with slow, gradual changes that you have to imagine happening long ago. We never observe an amoeba produce anything other than amoeba, but he thinks an amoeba slowly, over billions of generations, changed into a cow and everything else. Today, there are, in the real world, 450 breeds of cows that farmers recognize, four different basic types, dairy, beef, dual purpose. Probably all the cows had a common ancestor called a cow. See, in the real world, somebody with the time and interest could probably make a family tree where all the cows came from an ancestor, which would be a cow. But in the imaginary world of Planet Peterson, cows are related to frogs and fish and kitty cats, and they're all related. On Planet Peterson, hoofed animals like cows are related to butterflies and bees and frogs. This is the imaginary world that he lives in, folks. These charts that they make, these family trees, are pure imagination. It's fun, boys and girls. Just imagine. On Planet Peterson, all you have to do is imagine slow, gradual changes in the gene code, and you can change an amoeba to a cow and a butterfly and a frog. Just imagine. That's all this is, folks. It is certainly not science, what he believes. Okay, it's a religion. See how easy it is to turn an amoeba to a cow? Just imagine it, okay? Boys and girls, on Planet Peterson, we don't waste a lot of time trying to find a scientific answer to where our planet came from, or where time came from, or space, or matter, and all energy came from, or how that first amoeba just made itself out of the rock soup. He wants to bypass all of that. Those are essential steps for his religion to be considered as part of science. He wants to skip over all that. I assure you, he will skip over tonight, okay? We only focus on Planet Peterson, on how the first amoeba slowly changed over billions of years into the amazing plants and animals we have today. It's fun to just let your imagination run wild. In the real world, millions of hours of scientific research has led to the conclusion that there seem to be 700 varieties of butterflies in the world that have been grouped into 27 basic kinds in a family tree. I don't have any argument. I believe that, okay? Maybe God made 27 kinds of butterflies and they have produced the 700 varieties. I don't know. Okay? In the imaginary world of Planet Peterson, these variations in butterflies... Ooh, my timer, brother, didn't start. Oh, well, okay. These variations in butterflies is proof that they're related to humans and frogs and sharks, and they all evolve from an amoeba. See, in his imaginary world, everything's related. Eric, tell him later on, do you believe you came from an amoeba over billions of years, generated, and you're related to a frog and a butterfly? It's fun, boys and girls. On Planet Peterson, all you have to do is imagine slow, gradual changes in the gene code and mutations. And you can change an amoeba to a human, a butterfly, and a frog. It's easy. Nothing to it. On Planet Peterson, let's see, the butterflies, the frogs, the sunflowers, the sharks, all came from an amoeba. All you have to do is imagine it happening long ago and far away where nobody can see it. So easy, easy. In the real world, millions of hours of scientific research has led scientists to conclude there seem to be about 7,000 different recognized species of frogs based into 23 basic kinds of frogs in the family tree. So yes, we have varieties of frogs, no question. In the imaginary world of Planet Peterson, this variation of frogs is the world in the world is proof they're related to cows and fish and cats. And they all lived and all life evolved, misspelling there, from an amoeba. On Planet Peterson, they believe it's very important to require all people to pay to teach children at a young age about this imaginary conclusion. Very important. Everybody should pay for that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's the proof, boys and girls. We made a chart and drew lines connecting all of them. We know it happened because we have a chart with lines connecting all of them. See how easy that was? Nothing to it. In the real world, we see all plants and animals are always making babies like themselves, just like the Bible says, after their kind, after their kind, after their kind, after their sort. 20 times in the first 7 chapters. On Planet Peterson, we don't like the use of the word kind, so we use the word species, even though there's never been a solid definition of that word. This tonight's going to be a real challenge for Eric to explain, win the debate with the title, with the origin of species. What exactly is a species? Defined as a group of organisms that can reproduce naturally. However, classification of a species can be difficult, even riddled with controversy. Species, what is a species? It's a kind. Wow, look at that. Homonym are synonyms for a species. A kind, synonyms, a kind. Look at that. Wow, okay. Biological dictionary, definition of species. Group of organisms that share a common genetic heritage, able to interbreed. That's what the Bible says they can bring forth. To create offspring that are also fertile. Mm-hmm. Barriers do not allow for reproduction between two populations. Scientists have changed the definition of species several times throughout history. Which one are you going to use tonight, Eric? What is a species, according to Scientific American? To this day, scientists struggle with that question. The debate over species definition is far from over. What exactly is a species? An embarrassment of definition. May come as a surprise to see scientists struggling to agree on something so basic as how to decide that a group of organisms form a species. Perhaps 1.8 million species that scientists have named in the past few centuries, like the laws of endangered species, that can affect everything. If you don't know what a species is, how do you know one's endangered? It's fueled a debate for decades. There is no general agreement. Jonathan Marshall, biologist at University of Utah, Southern Utah University. At last count, there are 26 published circulation concepts of species. What's a species? 26 different ones. Huh. Charles Darwin was amused by all the struggles. It's really laughable to see what different ideas are prominent in various naturalist minds when they speak of species. He wrote in 1856, when it all comes, I believe, from trying to define the indefinable. Can't be defined. Huh. So Charlie Darwin said, even though the title of his book is The Origin of Species. He didn't even know what one is either, what species is either, okay? Meanwhile, other varieties become extinct. I look at the term species as one arbitrarily given for the sake of convenience to a set of individuals closely resembling each other, Darwin declared. Defining a species, evolution.berserkly, okay? Species is a group of individuals that actually or potentially interbreed. What is what the Bible says they can bring forth? That would be interbreeding, okay? Let's see. Definition of species might seem cut and dried, but it's not. In nature, there are lots of places where it's difficult to apply this definition. Let's see. Many plants and animals form hybrids. Is the hooded crow and the carrion crow the same species? And the birds don't care how we classify them. They do not even think about it. Okay. A set of animals or plants in which members have similar characteristics and can breed with each other. At Dinosaur Adventureland here in Lenox, we keep our sheep, donkeys, zebu, cows, and horses all together in the same pasture. We have never gotten a zeep, a zonkey, a heap, a how, or a shibu. They know what kind they are. and they show no interest in mating with each other, any other kind.
That was funny.
They know. See, species. Stanford Encyclopedia. The nature of species is controversial in biology. Biologists disagree on the definition of the term species. Philosophers disagree over the ontological status of species. What is a biological species? First glance, it seems easy to answer. Homo sapien is a species. So is Canis familiaris, dog. Many species can be easily distinguished. Biologists offer over 20 definitions of the term species. Britannica. There are over 20 different species concepts. What is a species? The most important concept in all biology is a complete mystery. Whoa. A koala bear isn't a bear, it's a marsupial. The basic idea is very simple. The certain groups of organisms have a special connection to each other. So what even is a species? The truth is, we don't have any idea. Bible says kind, so what's a kind? Well, if they can bring forth, I'd say it's probably similar to species in most cases, but it doesn't matter. The animals know, okay? A group of living organisms consisting of similar individuals capable of exchanging genes and interbreeding. That's fair, reasonable. The dog cannot change or interbreed with the cat or the cow or the pine tree. So what's the definition of species? Look at that. Kind, the second one over there. A kind or a sort. Wow. They're using that to define species. Defining species, group of individuals that actually or potentially interbreed. Berserkly says, understanding evolution, that's the definition right there, okay? While this system of classification has existed for 300 years, it's constantly evolving. They're still changing it. Now, radical shift in the grouping of organisms occurred with the development of DNA. Now we can really change them around, okay? Doesn't make any sense to abandon the idea that they bring forth after their kind. In New Zealand, their projects about the kiwi and the tartara DNA revolutionized the way we think, and their closest relatives. You think the humans are related to a banana because of similar DNA? I'd be careful about that word. Okay. On our current classification system, 2024, there are still disputes about how plants and animals should be classified. It doesn't matter.
20 seconds left.
They know what kind they are, and they seek to mate with their own kind. They don't care how we group them. Our cows show no interest in mating with the sheep or donkeys or squirrels. They don't even know what they look like, but they know what to look for in a mate. So on Planet Peterson, we have no rules, boys and girls. You can do what you want, be what you want. You can be a boy one day and a girl the next, or even explore all 57 genders. You can even have fun mating with your dog if you want. There are no rules. This is Planet Peterson we're talking about tonight. All right, go for it.
All right, Kent, thank you for that 10-minute opening statement. Gentlemen, that concludes our opening statements for tonight's great common dissent debate. We've got now plenty of points on the table to engage and interact with in a cross-examination, 20 minutes each. And so, Eric, we're going to hand it over to you. I'll restart the timer. And again, we are into a couple rounds of cross-examination. So, Eric, kick us off. Go ahead.
Yeah, before I do that, the moral grandstanding at the end there. So tax cheats, wife beaters, and people that let convicted child molesters share a cabin with 11-year-old boys at their park to morally grandstand.
Ad hominem. I knew he'd do that, Don. He can't do anything else. Go ahead.
Okay, Eric and truth. Kent, you both got your points in there. So let's now get right into cross-exam on the topic of common dissent. Go ahead.
Okay. So you talked about the cows earlier, Kent. How do you know that those cows are related? You had like a cow family tree. How do you tell that?
Oh, the burden of proof's not on me to have to prove it at all. I believe they are. I admit mine's a religion. You will not admit yours is a religion. You believe cows are related to butterflies,
so
don't you,
the question was, how do you tell that the cows are related?
I don't have to tell. I think they all look the same in the meat locker. It's a skin color. I think all human history.
Kent, we can scientifically test to what degree things are related, and I know that you know how to do that. So how do you tell?
I don't worry about it. I think cows always make cows. All farmers in history and all around the world will tell you cows always have baby cows. They've now developed certain varieties, more milk or more beef or stand the heat better, but they're all still cow. And okay. There seems to be a distinct limit.
So if somebody... you know the Maury Povich show where they used to do you are the mother or you are not the father, so on and so forth?
I don't think I've ever watched that, but okay.
Well, you've heard about it before, haven't you?
Maury Povich, something, yeah, okay.
Okay, so like for people, how do you do a paternity test? How do you tell?
I've never done that either. I have 3 children. I know they're mine. And
I'm not asking if you have done it. I'm just saying conceptually, how is that done?
Well, today it's probably one of the main tools they would use would be DNA analysis to see are you do you have the same DNA code as the child or the father or the mother.
Yep, and I mean all humans share basically the same genetic code. But you can tell who's more related, you can tell like this person is or is not your child, even though we're all humans, right? So it would be the exact same story with the cows, right? I know that you know that.
I know what you want me to say. It's correct. We have a lot of DNA similarities between all the different animals because the same designer must have written that code. All 4,000 books in my library probably have the same basic code, 26 letters of an English alphabet. It doesn't prove any relationship. This is very different than a paternity test from Maury Pervert or whatever his name was.
Okay. Genes. So genetics only tells you if things are related. So I have a question. What would be the only way it would be possible for 2 cows to not be related at all, to have zero relationship?
Well, I don't know. I don't care. I don't think they care either, but I don't know.
Do you agree that the only... Oh, sorry. Do you agree that the...
I don't know.
I got it. Do you agree that the only way it would be possible is if they share 0 genes?
I'd have to think about that one. I don't know. I never thought about that. I don't worry about that kind of stuff. But
parents pass on genes and their children share a collection of their genes from their parents. So if 2 brothers are related, it's because their parents pass down genes and you can tell that they have a overlap of those genes. That makes sense, right?
Well, as far as I know, that is pretty reliable. I think there's so many identical genes in all humans, you know, that may have gone back to Adam and Eve or to Noah. Sure, we probably have some similarity. There might even be some similar code in our DNA to the code of a monkey because they all have to have the same lines of code to grasp their fingers or blink their eyes or listen. Sure. So there may be lines of code because that's a necessary feature from a design perspective. So it's not the only way to prove there's relationship. There's where I think you're way off base, a different planet.
Okay, so would you agree that if 2 things share 0 genes, then they can't be related?
I don't know that could be proven. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, you could just sequence their DNA. We do that kind of thing all the time.
Would you understand how complex the DNA is? You got a code that goes from here across the solar system twice from one human being. That's a DNA code for one person. I don't think we can sequence all that. I don't think it's ever been all sequenced. All they're finding is the CATG series.
Genes get sequenced all the time. Like, let's not pretend that scientists don't know what they're doing and that you and I somehow know better. So if 2 things have 0 genes in common, they can't be related. That's just, I mean, I don't see how there's any getting around that.
Well, that's a statement you're making. I said I don't know. I'd have to have, it's not something I've gotten into the study of. But I think like just their sentence sequencing in all my books might be have all the adjectives before the noun. That's common. It was a big red train. Adjectives come before the noun. Oh, wow. Does that prove they're related to some other one that says, you know, the big blue cheese, chunk of cheese? No. It's a sequence that's necessary for English language.
Right.
Maybe there's a DNA code that's necessary to make things work.
But if there was
I don't know that it proves relationship. You don't either.
But if there was a language that shared literally 0 words or anything in common with English, we would not say that those 2 languages are related.
I don't think languages are related at all. It has to do with reproduction. I think related would be...
You don't think that Portuguese and Spanish are... By related, we mean that they're part of a language family.
I think you'd find thousands of identical words and very similar words in Portuguese and Spanish, certainly.
Yeah, because they come from common descent. But if 2 languages share literally nothing at all in common, then we would know that they would have there's 0 relation between them.
So you're using an example of things that do not reproduce. You guys
languages reproduce.
All the time. Languages reproduce. Yeah. I'd like to see how that happens. I taught biology for years. I don't believe that at all. Okay, languages don't reproduce. Okay, I think humans have to change them. So you guys get after me when I say Fords and Chevys have round tires. I said, they don't reproduce. Well, neither do languages, Eric. So why are you using that as an example?
Well, it's not your turn to ask questions, but write that down for later.
Oh.
So
you don't want to answer it. I see.
It's not your turn to answer questions. Those are the rules we agreed with. And you're actually not answering any questions right now, which is kind of frustrating. You've just basically been saying, I don't know. I think it's because you know where this is going. Everybody who knows how to think knows that the only way to have zero relation is to share zero genes. But the fact is, humans share genes with other organisms. So why is that the case if we're not related to other things?
I did answer that question, Your Honor. We can share genes because we have the common designer, because we have the common necessary functions, grasping your fingers together like monkeys do and humans do. That doesn't necessarily prove relationship. It could prove a common set of gene code to make the flexor muscles and extender muscles work to close the phalanges. So I think you're coming to the single conclusion. You're wanting a single conclusion. And I think there may be other things to explore. I would look at that more carefully if I was you.
So I didn't ask you any questions about like being able to move your fingers. You're obviously dodging this, and that's fine. We're just talking about genetics.
Not. You asked about a DNA code. There's a DNA code to make you flex your fingers. Isn't there?
I wouldn't say that there's a DNA code for doing this. DNA guides the development of muscles, but to say there's a DNA code that does this, I don't know what that could possibly mean. Okay. Like we talk, but there's no gene for saying the word balloon. But anyways, I have a lot more questions. So,
okay.
If you think that the gene overlap is because of common design, then why did God design us in a way that's indistinguishable from the evidence of evolution, i.e. that we would share genes? Because we know that passing on genes conveys relatedness between things.
I don't know that we know such a thing. You're making a statement, an assertion that I don't think has been demonstrated. I think
you agreed to it, paternity tests and all that kind of stuff. That's exactly what that
paternity
does.
Tests are usually pretty accurate, to my knowledge, to determine who the parents are on Mary, what is his name, pervert, whatever. So I think that that may be, but there's other explanations. I would be willing to bet every human being on the planet has DNA code that matches. You might even find DNA code in a human that matches a carrot.
So, Ken, the question was, why did God design the DNA code this way?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, that's what I was talking about in my opening statement. Okay, do you think God designed animals to live in the water?
It looks like it to me with all the fish and octopus. Quite a few animals live in the water. They look pretty well designed to live in the water.
So do you agree that things like dorsal fins, pectoral fins, tail flukes, those are traits for animals that live in the water, or that animals that live in the water have?
Yeah, they seem to be well designed for that purpose. I think they enjoy having them. I don't know. I never talked to them.
But you would agree. You actually answered my next question, so I think you're reading my mind. So I can skip that. But you agree that in organisms, its features, you know, phenotype, you think that that's sculpted by genes and how those genes are expressed, I would assume, right?
Right. I think the genetic code tells that body how to develop from an egg and a sperm into the full-grown animal. It's following a very incredibly complex code, way too complex to have ever happened by chance.
Yep. And you think that those genetic similarities that we see between organisms, that's caused by the common designer too, right?
Or by, I think the designer designed it just like they designed submarines to have, and airplanes also have ailerons. Because they have to go through a fluid medium, like a solid a liquid or a gas. So I think it's a great design feature that has to be. And they might have similarities in the code to make the aileron go up and down in an airplane and in a submarine.
Sure.
But what they're doing is doing the same thing to steer it, okay?
Hey, Donnie, where are we at with the time right now? Sorry.
Good question. You're just a little bit over 10 minutes.
Okay.
So you're doing pretty good. You're about halfway there.
Okay. Thank you very much. This whole thing about design and genetics and the phenotypes of organisms. So if God designed that genetic code, then that means the genetic code can objectively reveal to us evidence of common design if common design is a thing. So this is where some actual science can take place because we're not just making assertions. We have a claim and there's evidence we can actually look at for this claim. So Kent, do whales have things like tail flukes and dorsal fins and pectoral fins?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. What about sharks?
They do. Yes, sir.
Do hippopotamuses have those things?
They have some similar bone structure because it allows the different parts of their body to flex in the same way. That might be, you know, the different phalanges and stuff like that. But I don't know if hippos, I mean, I don't know if sharks have a scapula. I never thought about that. But I think they have some similar design features.
Well, I was just talking about the hippos. So hippos, with regard to like the tail fluke, the dorsal fin, the pectoral fins, they don't have any of those things. Obviously, a hippo has bones. So does a whale.
Right.
So anyways, so why is it that whales have the same design as sharks, but their DNA says they're more similar to hippos?
Well, I don't know that it says that. The whale is incredibly complex. God created the whales, according to my worldview, and I think they have a bone structure. I think they have fins. They have to do the same thing a shark has to do, swim through the water, raise and lower their depth through the water, navigate, turn, chase food, whatever they're doing.
But why is their DNA more similar to a hippo than a shark when the whale and the shark live in the same environment and have the same body organs, like structures?
Well, again, there would be several different ways to look at that. You would look at it as if it has to be, they have to be related. And I would say, well, the same guy designed them. I'd be willing to bet all the Sikorsky helicopter and all the Huey helicopter and all the other helicopters have a lot of design similarities.
So we went through this, that if the DNA code is designed and the DNA code is what creates these structures, then we would objectively be able to find evidence of common design with animals that have the same outward appearance of design. The evidence of that would be buried in the genetics. It's not, though. The whale shares vastly more genes with the hippo that has none of those features and lives on land compared with the shark. So this is a terrible failure.
Was that a question? I didn't hear.
Well, it was an explanation of the line of questioning here. So I'll just ask it again. Why is it that the DNA code, which we went over, is designed and would reveal evidence of design, shows that the whale and the thing it's more similar to, the design evidence just evaporates when we look at the DNA, which is also supposed to be designed?
I don't know that it evaporates. I think there's quite a few similarities still between a shark and a whale. Okay, I think
but there's so much more between the whale and the hippo.
I've never studied those DNA codes of any of those creatures. Okay, but if we find some similarities or differences that would not lead to the absolute sure conclusion that he's guilty, there is no God and it happened by chance and Charlie Darwin's the winner, I think you're coming to a vastly wrong conclusion. If there are some similarities,
I never said God doesn't exist.
Okay. If there are similarities between the DNA code of a whale and a hippo, but they both breathe air, maybe they have to have some lines of code for that. Sharks, as opposed to, don't have gills. Sharks have gills. They can breathe underwater, where whales don't. So I think that the DNA code is incredibly complex. I'd be willing to bet $5 if we had took the lines of code necessary to make a battleship and compared it to the lines of code necessary to make a helicopter, we'd find quite a few identical lines of code. Identical. It doesn't prove a relationship. That's the way it has to be designed. It's a design feature.
Okay. I mean, we could go into that more, but I have a lot more questions, and I don't want to run out of time. How many animals do you think were on the Ark?
Two of each kind.
And then there's like seven pairs of some of the other ones, right?
Seven of some, right? Yeah.
Okay. So how many animals do you think that would be?
The current wild guess by a group called the Bearmanology website, Bearman means kind in Hebrew. They claim there are probably about 8,000 pairs of 8,000 kinds of animals on the Ark. They have now diversified into the 167 varieties of ducks that we have today. Natural selection has caused them to diversify. Some can handle cold weather better. Some can handle hot weather. Some like, you know, different environments, but it can only select from what's already available. So I think that I have no idea, but I would guess if I had to pick a number, I'd say probably 8,000 kinds of animals, and they have now diversified into maybe even no definition of species.
And we can we can more than double that and just say there are like 20,000 if we want to be crazy about this. How long do you think it took those species that were on the Ark to become we've documented well over 1.5 million species today. There's probably a lot more than that. But how long do you think it took them to become the millions of species we see today?
Does that millions of species today include all the fish? Because they didn't have to go on the Ark. Where'd you get that number from?
The vast majority of species we've documented are insects. So we can take the fish, and that's only 10. That's only going to be tens of thousands, maybe near 100,000. But sorry.
Well, God told Noah to bring those on land in whose nostrils is the breath of life. Insects don't have nostrils. They weren't on the ark either. They can survive on floating vegetation, floating carcasses. So of the land-dwelling, air-breathing mammals, animals, it would take probably about 8 or 10 or 20,000. But see, to say those 20,000 turned into the, let's pick a number and say there's even 500,000. And again, there's no definition of species. Okay?
Right, but, Ken, I hate to interrupt, but I only have so much time. So the question is, how long do you think it took those 8,000 species to turn into the many, many, many hundreds of thousands of species we see today?
4,400 years is what the Bible says what dates would be.
Okay. So why is it that a few thousand species can turn into millions of species in a short time, but the idea of that happening over hundreds of millions of years is somehow not possible?
Well, we cannot observe hundreds of millions of years, okay?
And the question is, why is it not possible?
Well, first of all, it's not possible to have the hundreds of millions of years. There's lots of ways to prove the Earth cannot be that old. That's not this debate tonight. I do that on my video number one. It can't be billions of years old for lots of common sense reasons. Plus, we never see, what we've seen is 167 varieties of ducks.
The question is, why is it not possible? Not what have we seen? Why would it be impossible?
Well, there are barriers. There are certain barriers that animals reach a barrier, like the dogs. They got a 4.5-inch dog and a 44-inch dog. But there's a limit. You're not going to get a 5-mile-tall dog or a 1/2-inch-tall dog. There are 1/2-inch-tall creatures, insects by the millions, okay? And you guys don't admit there are limits to the variation. That's why you live on a planet with imagination. You can imagine these little changes going forever. Well, you and SpongeBob can get a room together, but that's not science.
So, again, why is it that we can just take one kind of animal that was on the ark or whatever? Like, why can one animal turn into the hundreds or maybe thousands of species of that animal that we can see today in just a couple thousand years, but more extreme changes are impossible?
Well, the science deals with what we can observe. We've observed humans being able to manipulate the gene code or selectively breed and develop new breeds of cows. There's a cow that gives 280 pounds of milk. Now, it wouldn't survive in nature. It survives in the barn, okay, when you bring the food to it and bring the water to it, but it can barely walk. So I think we've observed man can artificially select things and get quite a few strange varieties. They've now got over 330-some breeds of dogs, and most of them would not survive in the wild. So if you're talking about animals that are in the wild, these new species you're referring to, are they all living in colonies alive without man's assistance in the wild? Where'd you pick this number of millions of species? You're including insects, which you should not, because they didn't. It's just simply land-dwelling, air-breathing with nostrils. Read the Bible; it says that. But
there are hundreds of thousands of species of insects, and you think that although there was no dry land, they were flying around and didn't perish during the flood? That seems a little silly. I would like to get into that more later, but I'm almost out of time, so I want to try to get to my last question, if that's okay.
Got about 30 seconds, Eric.
If we go over by like a minute, is that okay?
Yeah. We're flowing good, so no problem.
That's okay with you too, Kent?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks. So humans, we have the gene for making vitamin C, but it doesn't work anymore. So why did God give us a genome that has dysfunctional parts?
I have a car that the radio doesn't work anymore either, but I don't think Chevy made it that way. I think they made it to work, and it just something broke over time. I think we're looking at man today as a, you know, great, 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 great grandson of the original. We're a copy off a copy off a copy. I think it's amazing anything still works with this incredibly complex gene code that you can pass on in an incredibly fun way to your next generation. So I think that's evidence of great design.
That it doesn't work is evidence of great design. I would never intentionally build something that I know is going to break. So God out just now. Are you claiming that Adam and Eve could make vitamin C and now we can't?
I don't know. I never met them. I'm going to meet them one day, but I suspect that they could.
Is there any evidence that they could?
I don't know. They lived to be 900. Must have done something right.
So you have no idea?
I don't think anybody does. How could I know? How could I know if Adam and Eve could make vitamin C? How am I supposed to know something like that? Do you know?
I don't know. That's the problem with, okay. Well, they certainly didn't exist. And this is the problem with your worldview. And this is what I talked about in my opening statement. We have either incredulity or I don't know, or I mean, just nothing. Did weird metaphors about cars with radios, I guess. So I went slightly over my time. We can pick up more of this later.
No worries. That was good. I liked the way that flowed and the fast-paced nature of it. So very good. A lot of fun. Now we're going to transition. And a couple of those points you guys were talking about at the end there, Eric, like you said, you can pick up on that after Kent's roughly 20 minutes now. So Kent, I'm going to reset the timer and you can lead the way for about 20 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. I shared, Eric, with you, let's see, 752, that many scientists quickly admit they do not know exactly what a species is. Would you please tell me, since the topic of the debate tonight is common descent the best explanation for the origin of species? Would you please tell me what is a species exactly? Give me a foolproof, airtight definition of species.
Well, like you said, there are multiple definitions, and we do have demarcation problems. That is a real, like, philosophical quandary. So the easiest explanation that's typically used, like in schools or whatever, is a species is a group of animals that live in the same environment that can reproduce and produce fertile offspring. So you get weird exceptions to this, however, like lions and tigers. They can reproduce and produce a hybrid, although they don't live in the same environment. Now, typically those hybrids are sterile, but I have heard that they have successfully produced, I don't know what you would call it, viable, fertile, I guess, lion-tiger hybrids. Hybridization is also common in the plant world as well. So plants that can be wildly different end up having some sort of hybrid compatibility.
Okay. Would you agree that the example you gave, the lion and the tiger, are both considered in the cat, we'll call it family for lack of a better word, kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. They're both in the cat family, right?
Yeah, the Felidae, I think that's a family, yeah.
Okay, I don't speak Latin, it's a dead language. So does that, is because we can see the two in the cat family hybridize, does that make you believe that lions are related to potatoes?
So the way you would test that, because Darwin had this crazy idea that life has changed so much on our planet that, you know, entire species become something different over time, which would imply, it wouldn't necessarily imply that there's one universal common ancestor, but that was the idea. And then later we figured out how to, that when animals or plants, whatever, when something reproduces, there's a hereditary molecule. We figured it out. It's DNA. So then in the 20th century, it was time to see if evolution would pass this test. If we can see that there is relatedness and specifically a hierarchy of relatedness, mammals should share more genes in common with each other than they do with any other group of animals on the planet, so on and so forth. And that's exactly what happened. So do cats and potatoes share genes? Yes. Is that what it means to be related? Yes.
So you believe, for the record here, Your Honor, cats, the lion and the potato are related because they share some genes, okay?
Scientifically, that's the only thing we know about genetics. What it tells us is relatedness. And you can tell how closely related something is by how much the genetics diverges. That's how you would do a paternity test. That's how you could tell to what degree your dog is like a purebred or a mutt or whatever. And it extends across species.
So is it even possible in your on planet, Peterson, that maybe the potato sends roots into the dirt and has to draw minerals out of the dirt? It has to have a code to tell it how to extract certain minerals to make a potato. And the lion has to eat certain things that contain these same minerals to build body parts that he needs. He has to, you know, keep adding gas to the vehicle. Could it be that they both have a common need for certain minerals, and could their genetic code similarities be a result of a common need for something? Or is ancestry the only way it could happen? They have to have a great-great-great, share a great-great-great-grandpa? Or could it be the same designer made them to meet the same needs?
If life on this planet has a common ancestor deep in the past, then that means that there would be like whatever's conducive to life, whatever works well for life, the absorption of minerals. Like we have carbon-based life on this planet, not silicon-based life. It's been proposed that that's possible. But chemically speaking, perhaps carbon just simply is the best. And in the competitive environment of the biosphere and all these other geobiochemical cycles that interact together, certain things are more conducive for life to other things. So that would carry across even vast stretches of time toward organisms. So if there are some things, like there aren't very many things that potatoes and cats have in common, but like the idea that it was a common designer that did it and that it's not just the rules of biology, I don't really see that at all, how the idea of the designer is the better explanation. Because that idea can't be tested in any way. It's just a declaration after we learned the facts of genetics. No creationist ever said, you know what? I bet we'll find a hereditary molecule and you'll be able to see all these crazy similarities.
Well, I disagree. I think it's been tested billions of times. They've always plant potatoes and expect potatoes to grow. When they crossbreed cats, they expect cats to come out.
Yep, that's how evolution works too, Kent.
So I think you avoided my question, though. Is there any other explanation for the potato and the cat having DNA structures that are identical? And some lines of code might be identical.
Just like only one explanation has any evidence, and that's the idea of evolution over time because of what we learned about how genetics and inherited characteristics works and all that. The design thing, there's no... You can just say that after the fact. It could also be unicorn farts that just made it look that way. I can just declare that with no evidence and no explanatory mechanism. But okay. I don't believe in things that there's no evidence for.
Your whole worldview is believing in things that there's no evidence for. There's no evidence for a cat ever producing anything other than a cat. There's no evidence for a potato.
That's an idiotic straw man of evolution. Evolutionists don't say that it works like Pokemon or something like that.
Okay.
I know that you know this because it's been told to you.
Oh, well, that doesn't mean I swallowed the garbage, okay?
Well, it doesn't mean you understood it either, I guess.
Oh, I understand it, yeah. Here's the chart.
No, because you ask horrible questions.
It's my turn to ask questions, Your Honor. Here is the chart used straight from the public school textbook, showing the butterfly has a common ancestor with a frog and a sunflower and a shark. And the ancestor was an amoeba. This is not science. You said it's evidence-based. Where is the evidence for an amoeba ever producing anything other than another amoeba? Where's the evidence of an amoeba learning how to get wings and fly like a butterfly or swim in the water like a frog? Your chart shows that it happened. You want this to be taught to all the kids. All you have is imagination. See, just like I think God did it, made the similarity, you think, oh, over time it did it. You're living in an imaginary world. Where's the evidence of an amoeba producing anything other than an amoeba? They've tried in the laboratory. They can't make it happen. Where's your evidence to make me want to pay for this chart to be taught to the kids? Show me the evidence of where it actually happened. An amoeba produced a non-amoeba. Show me the evidence.
Two problems. One, you're idiotic straw man. So here's like a family tree, right? So we have this generation and then this generation and then the one before it. So whatever. So if like you family tree, right? Can't like this makes sense. This is just a clarification question.
Oh, I have a family tree. I had parents, probably you did too. And I probably grandparents too.
Sure. When did the grandparents produce the grandchildren?
Well, you're this is a straw man you're bringing up here now. You're avoiding
it's not.
My question.
So. No, I'm not avoiding your question. I'm just explaining the folly of your logic. Grandparents don't produce grandchildren, but that's not what a tree like this or like the one you're showing us tells you. It just tells you what is related and to what degree those things are related. For example, right here where my finger is, these are more closely related than these over here. So the first problem is nobody ever said that amoebas produced humans or anything like that. That's not what your chart says. I know that this has been explained to you. I don't know why you continue to say it. But if you can understand that this chart doesn't mean that grandparents produce grandchildren, they produce offspring of their own that then go on to produce other offspring, then there we go. Now, how do we tell the grandparents are related to their children? by testing their genes. And we've tested the genes of life on this planet. If no life on the planet outside of its own species or whatever had any genetic commonalities at all, if the correlation was zero, that would have been catastrophic for evolution. It would have completely collapsed. But that's exactly the opposite of what happened. We share more genes with other great apes than any other form of life. And then we share not as many, but more with other mammals than any other form of life. And then we share even fewer with, you know, you go birds, reptiles, amphibians, whatever, all the way down to the plants. So.
Okay. You avoided my question. Where is the evidence?
No, I did not. It's in the genetics.
Okay. Your grandparents produced humans.
Yep.
Those produced more humans.
Yep.
So I think if you trace your family tree back, you'd find they're all humans. This family tree that you want us to pay to teach to the kids in school shows an amoeba over, upside down, no, an amoeba turning into everything today. And you're saying we see evidence because they have similar code. The question is, where, just take step one. I did not see your great-grandparents produce your grandparents, but I'd be willing to bet they were all human. Where is the evidence for an amoeba producing anything other than an amoeba? They make baby amoebas all the time. They had an experiment where they take bacteria, 8-hour generation time. They get born, grow up, get married, have babies in 8 hours. And they've done that ongoing experiment for about 100 years now. And they get tens of thousands, maybe millions of generations of bacteria, and they never change to anything but a bacteria. But you want me to believe on your planet, Peterson, that a bacteria or an amoeba could over slow steps because we can't see them. I think we can see all through human history. Humans make baby humans. Your grandparents were human. Now, I asked you, where is the evidence of just a single step, the first step of the amoeba becoming non-amoeba?
Right. I've answered that. It's in the genetics, but I'll do a better job of answering the question because you don't like my answer. The problem is it's so incredibly hard to address this without asking a question in return. But we agreed to the rules, so I will abide by the rules.
You can ask questions, but I think you're trying to avoid my question.
No, I'm not. So if it's okay with you, I'll do it. Do you think that evolutionary biologists think that the way evolution works is one day an animal gives birth to a completely different animal?
No, I've never said that either. You guys
accused me of that. Yes, you did. You said, when did an amoeba produce a non-amoeba?
Okay,
that's exactly your claim, your goofy straw man of evolution.
Okay, I'll try to make it real simple so you can follow it. Does this chart show the butterfly coming from the family tree root of an amoeba? Everything starts off as an amoeba. It starts at an amoeba. That's the family. The root of the whole tree is an amoeba.
No.
So somewhere along the line, it's not.
No, the amoeba is one of the branches at the base, but it doesn't tell you what the base organism is.
Okay. So was it a protozoa? Was it a single celled creature of some kind?
A single celled eukaryote, almost certainly, yeah.
Okay. Where is the scientific evidence of that first single celled eukaryote producing offspring that were other than a single-celled eukaryote?
So there are things in the past that we will never see happen. The question is, can we gather evidence in favor of a conjecture? We can. It's in the fossil record and it's in the genetics. I'd rather save the fossil stuff for next time because I think that's part of the geologic column, if that's fine with you. Because I don't want to diverge down too many different paths, but...
It's a good way to avoid my question for the fourth time. Where is the evidence of an amoeba
in the genetics,
or a single-celled creature? So there's genetic evidence that an amoeba turned to a butterfly, and we should pay for this chart to be taught to the kids.
So for the Brazilianth time, you can test if things are related by looking at the genetics, and we see a very perfect nested hierarchy of genetic similarities, genetic relatedness across organisms and across phyla, exactly what you would expect if evolution is true. So that is the evidence.
So because there are similarities in the DNA code, therefore, one changed slowly over multiple millions of generations of slow steps into the butterfly. There are single-celled creatures with 16,000 DNA strands in them. 16,000 chromosomes in a single cell.
Okay. DNA gets duplicated. We know that.
Oh, and that's an amazing process. Woo-wee. And I mean, the way it has to split the DNA and one loops backwards and goes through the special machine that realigns it with the new one. You should study how DNA.
No, I mean like entire genes get duplicated. I don't mean the DNA double helix splits and gets replicated for mitosis, meiosis. I mean entire genes get duplicated. We have multiple copies of certain genes.
Right. And and that process happened with no designer. Nobody made it.
Correct.
Did somebody make the computer that you use?
Probably.
Did they write all the different lines of code to do all the different things computers do?
Probably.
Could any of those arise by random mutations and chance?
That's not how computers are done or are made, so I don't understand the irrelevant question.
Well, if computers can't make themselves through mistakes and mutations, why would you think a butterfly with its incredibly complex DNA code can be a result of mutations over trillions of years from an amoeba or a single cell?
Because that's what
creature.
The DNA evidence tells us.
Okay. So you observe this DNA similarity and conclude, without seeing it happen, you conclude that it must have happened in the past over millions of years. That's why I call it a religion. You believe that. You're welcome to believe it. I don't care what you believe. But to quit calling it science. Science, what we can observe, study, test, and demonstrate. You can't do it. Get a bunch of bacteria.
You can't observe the past, but you can make scientific tests of events that occurred in the past. This is how forensics is done, for example.
Uh-huh. So you believe we should all be required to teach that this chart is actually science. The amoeba, slowly over billions of generations, gained enough new information to become a shark and a sunflower and a frog and a kangaroo and everything else. I object. That's not scientific. That's your belief. We don't see
what's it. Not science. Oh, it's sorry. That's okay. Not my turn to ask questions.
Well, to it. Get an amoeba and do it again. Let me see it happen this time. Do it again. Why can't it happen? Why do you believe it could happen long ago and far away, fairy tale style, but we can't make it happen today? They've been trying to get bacteria to change to something else and they can't get it to work. But so why should I believe it happened in the past? How's a fossil going to show that?
So no evolutionary biologist thinks that evolution happens in this weird Pokemon sort of style that you've proposed. They propose instead that it is gradual changes over vast stretches of time. But like, for example, in order to go from single-celled to multi-celled eukaryotes, the idea that Lynn Margulis came up with of endosymbiosis was proposed. And then what did we find? That mitochondria, well, we already knew this, that mitochondria and chloroplasts, they have their own DNA. They make copies of themselves. The cell doesn't make, your cells don't make mitochondria. The mitochondria do binary fission, just like prokaryotes do. Maybe one day, a very long time ago, that sort of endosymbiotic relationship began. So that's a testable idea. And when we looked at the genetic composition of chloroplasts, we found it was remarkably similar to blue-green algae, exactly what you would expect. And then when we tested when we sequenced the genomes of mitochondria, we found it was remarkably similar to different types of prokaryotes. And we actually have now witnessed a new organelle, the nitroblast or something like that, a nitrogen-fixing organelle has now newly been identified to occur in some sort of plant cell, I believe it was. I don't remember exactly.
Okay. Well, you answered my question finally. You answered by saying maybe a long time ago this happened.
Yeah,
it's a religion.
No,
it's a
that's
religion.
A hypothesis, and then we look for evidence.
Just admit, Eric, I believe it happened long ago and far away.
Because of
can't
the evidence.
A
belief that has zero supernatural appeals literally can't be a religion. So I know that even you get that. So I'm not going to address this religion thing
really
again.
It.
It's
okay.
It's too stupid to deserve any more attention.
You are unwilling to admit that you believe by faith.
Nope, evidence.
That this happened in the past. You're afraid to admit you believe it by faith, because then you're going to lose tax funding for your religion to be taught in schools.
We've gone over the evidence, so what's your next question?
My conclusion is, could that same evidence be interpreted? Wow, maybe the designer designed all these different life forms to live in the same environment, to use the same minerals out of the ground or the same gases out of the air to do different things, respiration, cell duplication.
There's no evidence of that, though. It's just a claim. No evidence.
You missed my question.
It's just a claim.
Listen to the question.
Okay.
Could it be a designer did it that way?
Yes, but there's no evidence.
So yes, it could be that a designer did it.
Yes, but there's no evidence. It could also be that a different god that isn't the one you believe in made it that way. Well, there's no evidence of that either.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say if I was to analyze the data, the lines of code to make Microsoft PowerPoint and examine the lines of code to Microsoft Word, I would find millions of identical lines of code. I would therefore conclude they got to be related. One made the other. They both came from Morse code. No, the same guys wrote the code would be another logical conclusion. So you're unable to admit or realize that there might have been a designer who did it for a reason. We may not even know the reason yet.
Yeah, the problem is you don't have any evidence or a working hypothesis. You hijacked the scientific data after the fact. After all this was learned, you and I are lucky enough to live when we do now and we know so much. You took all the evidence and after the fact said, this is how my God did. I did this in my opening statement, and I think maybe I'm a prophet because you're just living up to exactly the caricature of yourself that I drew up at the beginning.
Okay, well, I believe by faith that this book I'm holding right here is true, and it says they will bring forth after their kind, after their kind, after their kind, after their kind of every sort. This is all that's ever been seen. Now, Charlie Darwin wrote a book, The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races and the Struggle for Life. Do you think all the species Charlie Darwin envisioned, all the species changing into no matter which definition of species you use, a butterfly is a different species than a sunflower. So, but you believe it?
Oh, I think Kent looked like he hit the wrong button. But I will say, as we wait for him to come back.
How were we on time on there? It had to have been getting close.
Yeah, you know what? We just hit 21 minutes, a little bit over.
Okay.
And so you both got 21 minutes each. And so
sure. If he wants to ask like one more question when he comes back, because I did that, I'm fine with that.
Okay, let's do that. We'll do one final question and then Eric will let you respond. Once you respond, we'll shift right into a final 20 minutes of just free flowing. So if you had something else you wanted to ask him or a topic you wanted to touch on. As we wait for Kent, you mentioned earlier, Eric, that there will be a second debate that will focus heavily on the fossil record. So the fossil record and the geologic column, as tonight, especially here in the roughly 42 minutes of cross-exam, we focused a lot on genetics and biology. And with that, Kent is back. Kent, let's do this. Before we lost you, I was just going to say we just hit your time basically for asking questions. Let's have you ask one more question. Then we're going to shift into our final phase, which is more of a free-flowing discussion.
Okay.
It's not as strict. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I will ask this in a question form then for Mr. Planet Peterson. He got mad at me asking it like that. Are there any rules? Where do standards come from? How do you tell right from wrong in your worldview? Is it okay for a boy to change to a girl at 57 genders? I mean, this is what the evolution theory leads to. Is there a standard like thou shalt not? Is it okay to go next door and kill your neighbor's baby and eat it? Is there anything? How do you tell
if God told you to do it, then you would say it's okay. So don't come to me with your precious standards. And this has nothing to do with evolution.
Okay. In your evolution worldview, how do you tell what is right or wrong to do in society?
I don't think that you would use evolution to do that. Just like I wouldn't use my car to play basketball.
Wow. That's a stretch. Okay.
It's really not a stretch. How do you use the Bible to do math? Irrelevant question. See?
Okay. Well, is it wrong for a human to go next door and kill the neighbor's baby and eat it? And if it's wrong, why do you think that is wrong?
This has nothing to do with evolution.
I'm going
to
jump in, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
Perhaps since we do just have 20 minutes left, let's focus as much as we can on the common descent question. I do understand the importance of the morality topic, but with only 20 minutes left, let's do this. Let's consider that our two rounds complete. You both had about 22 minutes each to ask questions, and I enjoyed the fast-paced nature of it. I think you both did a good job keeping it engaging. So with 20 more final minutes, let's do this. Since Kent asked the last question, Eric, let's give you the floor. You are in the affirmative, so let's have you pick the next topic pertaining to common descent. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I just figured we'd probably just do more questions back and forth, but instead of like Kent's not allowed to ask any questions, it's right, it's a little bit more organic, of a free fall.
Yeah,
let's do that. That's fine with me. Let's see. Kent, do you have an explanation for why did God design animals that live full time in the water, such as dolphins, to breathe air when other marine animals like fish don't do that?
Oh, yeah. If I was God, I would design a wide variety of things just to make people who don't want to believe in me anyway figure out some way to get around believing in me. I think he did it to just those who hate him. Okay. He would leave traces and make them scratch their heads. Aha, I got him. Probably just to make evolutionists have justified themselves for not believing. But I think dolphins enjoy the way they're made, and they seem to be smiling all the time. Watch Flipper. So I don't think they would complain about their design.
So you think the reason God made animals that live in the water breathe air is to make evolutionists say what?
Oh, it's kind of just a joke, I guess. I think there's people like you who they don't want to believe.
What's your actual answer then?
I think they're designed for that. I think God made a wide variety of things.
You're begging the question. I asked, why did God design them that way? And you just said, God designed them that way.
How can I possibly know that? Why did the...
Exactly. You have a useless worldview.
Why did the A-10 Warthog designers design the cockpit to be off-center from the center of the plane, you know? And let the designers handle that, okay? That's a problem they got to handle. My dad was an engineer at Caterpillar Tractor Company. They're always designing different things. I believe everything shows evidence of design. It sure works awfully well. At least, especially since we're who knows how many generations away from the original. So if some things no longer work, like a radio in my car doesn't work, that's okay. I don't care. So it doesn't prove it wasn't designed. So you jump to the conclusion that, wow, because something doesn't work, therefore nobody designed any of it.
I never said anything doesn't work. I just asked you, why do dolphins breathe air when fish don't breathe air? Why would God design them that way? And you said you don't know, and it's not possible to know because you can't comprehend what your designer does. Again, this is what I talked about in my opening statement, and everything I said is coming true.
Well, the difference is I admit I believe by faith God designed it. You will not admit that you believe by faith the amoeba turned to the dolphin. Your chart shows the amoeba over millions of generations slowly turning to a dolphin.
Yeah, but that idea is testable, and we went over that. So are you conceding that you can give me zero reason to believe what you believe? Because by your own admission, it's incomprehensible and you can't explain it in any way?
I believe every living creature on the planet is so complex, even an amoeba, a mosquito, the whale, every living thing is complex beyond our comprehension. It takes thousands of hours of study to just begin to understand how it works, to actually make one. I tell you what, get all the scientists in the world together, give them all the chemicals they want, all the elements, see if they can make a mosquito. They can't do it. They can't do it. The mosquitos can make other mosquitos.
Do you know do you know what an argument from incredulity is?
Yeah, you've been making them all night.
No, you just unironically made one. You said, we don't know how to make life, therefore God made life. So you haven't given any evidence.
You said you don't know how life got started, but therefore it had to start over millions of years. You haven't given any evidence of how that happened either.
Yes, I have.
Where's the evidence of life coming from non-living material?
Oh, well, that's not what evolution is. That's abiogenesis. But
that's an essential step.
So the alternative explanation would be that life must be the product of miraculous creation, but there's literally nothing miraculous about life at all. When the DNA is copied, does a miracle occur? No, we understand scientifically how that happens. Does a miracle occur when the Krebs cycle happens and organisms phosphorylize ADP and extract energy, whatever? No, no miracle takes place. So on what grounds must I assume that the origins of a chemical process like life, a merely physical, non-miraculous chemical process, life, on what grounds must I assume that that had miraculous origins when literally everything we know about it is non-miraculous? That's just not tenable. That's a really bad argument from incredulity and ignorance.
Okay. We understand how gasoline explodes if it's mixed with oxygen and gets a little spark to it. We understand how it gets into the piston and the piston pushes the piston down. If you have rings and valves, we understand how engines work. Therefore, nobody made the engine because we know how it worked. Nobody made the engine. Are you kidding? Nobody made it. We know how it works. That's your argument, and you don't even see it.
No, your question was, is life the product of mere non-miraculous physical laws or whatever, which would be my worldview, a secular worldview, or was it done magically by a special creator? There's no evidence that it was done magically by a special creator. Even if I don't know how life was created, that doesn't mean that your argument is correct. This is just classic argument from ignorance and incredulity.
If I don't know who built the engine and I didn't see the engine get built, therefore I know how it works. I understand how compression works and the timing cycle and all that stuff and the valves and the valve lash and everything. I've done a lot of engine work. So therefore, because I understand how it works pretty well, nobody made it. That's your argument. My question was, can you make a mosquito? You can tell me how it works. You can tell me about the Krebs cycle, how it gets its energy, and you can tell me how it flies and how the muscles contract and how the ATP and all that stuff work. That's not telling me how it got there. You're avoiding the question completely. How did it originate? You are. You don't know. I don't know how. If it's like saying, I know how the engine works, therefore nobody made it. You know how life works. We know how we take gases out of the air and minerals out of the ground and synthesize it into our body cells. Yeah, we have a pretty good understanding of a lot of that stuff. But that doesn't explain the origin of it. You're avoiding it completely.
The origin would be complete. So if God created life on this planet, but billions of years ago, like I think, that wouldn't make evolution false. Everything we know about biological evolution would be true. Abiogenesis is a separate question. The evidence for evolution only points in one way. Now, for abiogenesis, I did go over this earlier. I don't know specifically how the very first living thing came into being, but that doesn't mean that your God did it. And there's no evidence that any God could have done it because we have no reason to assume that the process that produced organic life on this planet had to have been miraculous because there's no evidence of that. But also, nothing about life is miraculous. So there's no reason to assume it must have been the work of some being of infinite incomprehensibility.
Okay. There's no evidence of how it got started with your worldview either. That's why you avoid that. There's no evidence that life can come from non-living chemicals in a warm little pond someplace. This is a theory, a philosophy, a belief, a religion. There's no evidence. There's no evidence. I don't have any evidence of how the Chevy motor was made for my truck. I have no evidence. I didn't see it. I've been to Chevy. I worked at General Motors. I know how they go to. I understand how they work. And you're telling me because we understand how life works, therefore, there's no evidence that there was a designer.
There's no requirement for a designer to be. So when we have questions that we don't have answers for yet, we search for the best explanation. And a magic explanation, I don't think is ever preferable to a natural explanation, but the natural explanation has a really massive burden of proof, and we don't have any working theories for abiogenesis or anything like that yet. But we take what we know about life, that all life shares genes, so that would point to a common ancestor, like a last universal common ancestor, or whatever, a long time ago. And we know that life is made of ordinary chemicals. Like, literally, life is chemistry. So the idea that chemistry would beget life in the first place is really not very far-fetched. It's not religious in any way. It's just scientific because we're studying life and applying what we know about life to try to make come up with new ideas, experiments, explanations, things like that. Like there's research in Origins of Life, Abiogenesis. They've been able to make autocatalytic self-replicating chemical systems with RNA. They've been able to do it with amyloids, which are a type of protein, for example. Prions, which are like these folded proteins that you get, they cause things like mad cow disease and things like that. Prions actually make, they replicate themselves. They are these folded proteins, and they are capable of synthesizing more copies of themselves. So whatever the process that would have generated life, we see analogs to that, but we don't have highly sophisticated explanations like we do for like general relativity and things like that. That's fine, okay. But it doesn't mean that God did it is an acceptable answer.
Right. Doesn't mean that God did it. Sure. And neither does it mean that it happened by chance. It means we both have a religious belief in how it happened, and you want me to pay for yours to be taught. Here's a public school textbook, Glencoe Biology, one of the top four publishers. It says, Earth is formed 4.6 billion years ago. It was a hot ball of rock. It rained on the rocks for millions of years. And in these oceans, the first living organisms appeared. Poof. That's not science. That's a religious statement. They believe it happened. Mr. Nelson gets all upset. Nobody believes we came from a rock. Yes, you do. Earth began as a hot ball of rock. Do you believe Earth was a hot ball of rock 3.9 billion years ago, and it cooled down and it rained on the rocks and turned to soup in the oceans, and we came from the soup? This is what the textbooks teach. You think this is science?
It certainly isn't religion. I don't know if you have your own private language that nobody else uses, but the definition... Could you actually give a definition for what religion is?
Sure. Religion, right here. Thank you for asking. I got it right here. Definition of religion, a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. What caused the universe?
Read the rest of that.
Okay.
Especially
when considering as a creation of superhuman agency or agencies, usually involving devotional and ritual observances, and often containing a moral code governing the conduct of human affairs. This is evolution in a nutshell right here. What was the cause of the, and then what's the purpose of the universe in your worldview, and the Patterson world? In the Patterson world, why are we here? What's the purpose of the universe? Is there any purpose to it at all?
Maybe not, but that has no bearing on whether or not evolution is true.
Okay, do you have a set of beliefs concerning the cause of the universe? Do you believe the Big Bang caused it?
No secular scientist thinks the Big Bang caused the universe. That's really dumb. Okay, the topic of tonight's debate.
No. Where did time, space, and matter come from? We're here.
I don't know, but that has no bearing on whether or not evolution is true.
I agree, but it does have a bearing on whether or not it's a religion, and it is a religion. You believe somehow the time, space, and matter got here. You believe that by faith, but you have no explanation for it. I believe by faith God did it. You believe by faith it just did it. You don't know how. That's my point.
You actually don't know what science. I believe because I never made any claims with respect to that. So you don't know what I believe.
You believe you're related to a potato, and you have because you have common DNA. You said you believe that kind
that's
of
what
stuff.
It means to be related to something. So even you know that.
I know. So you do have beliefs.
Okay. So we agree. Humans are related to potatoes.
You just said you don't. Okay. So I gave you the definition of religion. A specific fundamental set of beliefs and practices generally agreed upon by a number of persons or sects. Do you believe, do a lot of other people believe that they're related to a potato? Do you hang around people who believe the same thing as you and you have a website and a YouTube channel and people say, wow, you're doing a great job, Eric. You believe like us. We're all potatoes.
Do I hang out with people that think we are related to potatoes?
Do you?
Maybe, but it's never come up. But you actually said we are because we share genes.
Okay.
You agreed to that. That's what that means.
Okay. Well, religion. Back on topic. So if you're related to a potato, do you eat potatoes? Do you eat French fries? Or
I love potatoes.
Chips?
Potatoes, it's one of the most versatile foods on the planet.
I know. So you eat your relatives. Shame on you.
Was that supposed to be funny?
It is funny. Okay. I think most people with a brain cell working understand that is funny. Okay. human beings' relationship.
If you only have one brain cell, then you would think that's funny. If you have more than one, you would not.
I see.
I think that's the difference between us.
Yeah. They regard as holy, sacred, and absolute. You believe absolutely that all life came from a single cell creature.
Nope.
And you don't believe that?
I don't believe it absolutely, and it certainly isn't a holy belief of mine.
Oh, okay.
Can I address some things to it's been more so directed at me for the last several minutes, if you like.
You ask any questions you like.
Sure. Do birds have teeth?
Do birds have teeth?
Yeah.
I think some hummingbirds do. I don't know whether it's just a keratin projection or not, actual tooth, like, you know, enamel. I don't know.
No, they're not really teeth. Their beaks can be like bumpy, but they don't
serrated,
have real
right.
teeth.
Serrated, uh-huh.
Yeah. People right. say geese have teeth too. They don't. They just have bumpy beaks. That's not right. real teeth. So if birds evolved, then they would have evolved from an animal that had teeth, and they would have gradually lost those teeth. That's what the evolutionist would say happened.
Your first three words give it away. If birds evolved, they didn't. They were created.
So in science, or even like in a court of law, just common sense, we start with questions, and then we propose, mm-hmm. if this is what happened, then this would be like, we're basically forming a hypothesis, I guess. If this sure. happened, then that would be the evidence. So I think you agree that that's what the evolutionary prediction would be. Do you know what Hesperornis is?
It's one of the types of birds or something, a fossil they found.
Mm-hmm. Could you, you're sharing the screen. Could you like Google Hesperornis and we could look at a picture of it?
In PowerPoint, I can't Google it and show the screen. Oh, okay. I can have to cut it and paste it into a PowerPoint slide. It doesn't matter. If they find a fossil in the dirt like Hesperornis, all you could really prove is it died. You don't know it had any children. Do you know they had children that were different than themselves?
So again, the way evidence works is we're not trying to establish absolutes or anything like that. We are looking for evidence consistent with an explanation or a hypothesis. So Hesperornis does have teeth. It is a bird with teeth. Hesperornises are not around anymore. They went extinct. How is the explanation, or how is that anything other than evidence of evolution?
What? If a creature goes extinct, maybe that's an example of extinction,
I'm talking about Hesperornis having teeth, not that it went extinct. Hesperornis has teeth. Modern birds do not. Exactly what we would predict in the theory of evolution is that birds would be descendants of animals that had teeth. They would gradually lose them. It's not Pokemon where one day a dinosaur lays an egg and inside that egg is a hummingbird.
Well, Eric,
we found birds with teeth. How is that anything other than evidence of evolution?
I think the fact that we find fossils at all is evidence of rapid burial like Noah's flood would do. How many animals died in the last 5 years?
You're not answering the question. None of them turned to
fossils. Well, I am. If we find a fossil of a bird with teeth and we can no longer find them alive, first place, I don't think you could prove anything is extinct. It would get to be all places at the same time. Extinction is very hard to prove. But let's suppose it is extinct. It could be God designed a lot of different creatures and some have gone extinct. That's not evidence for evolution. How on earth do you twist it to make that conclusion? It could just as well be that Hesperornis is incredibly complex, really more complex than the space shuttle.
And does evolution mean change over time? Is that the implication?
Well, you'd like it to be a nice, simple definition like that. I think evolution has six different meanings. I cover that many times. I know you don't like them. You want to avoid the cosmic evolution, chemical and stellar evolution and organic evolution and the origin of life. You want to avoid all that. And I know why, because you want to make it real simple. Change over time. Sure, there's changes. There are now 339 breeds of dogs. And man has changed some of them to make the Chihuahua and the Great Dane, but they're limited. So if that's what you mean by evolution, then creation is true.
If birds evolved, then if birds which don't have teeth evolved, then they would have evolved from a tooth-bearing common ancestor. Hesperornis, it's really not debatable whether or not Hesperornis was a bird. Okay. Like we could look at Archaeopteryx and there's arguments like, was it really a bird or was it not really a bird? Hesperornis has teeth. That is exactly what you would predict if evolution is true.
So let me see if I got this. a bird was found, a fossil bird with teeth.
Yep.
Birds today don't have teeth.
Yep.
Therefore, it had to evolve from Hesperornis.
It's maybe evidence consistent with the hypothesis. Yes, it is.
My hypothesis would be God designed a variety of birds.
Some Where's could fly, the evidence?
Some cannot fly because we have birds today that cannot fly, like the ostrich and the emu. They can't fly, like the penguin. Okay, so I think God designed some birds with teeth, and he designed some without teeth, and the one with teeth went extinct because people hunted them or killed them or they died for, I don't know, but they're gone. Let's assume they're gone. But to say that because we find birds with teeth in the fossils and we find birds they don't have teeth, therefore there's a connection between them, Your Honor, throw this case out. This is silly logic.
Well, that's evidence consistent with the idea.
No, it's not in your world.
Well, it is, because if birds evolved, they evolved from something that had teeth, and we find intermediates, birds with teeth.
You don't know birds evolved at all. You're starting with your conclusion.
No, I'm not.
And you're
that's not. No, you're starting with a proposed like hypothesis or whatever. If evolution is true, here's the evidence.
Stop right there.
Here's the evidence.
Stop right there. It's not true.
Is that how it works? So, Kent, every single time you propose something in your worldview, I'm going to interrupt you and say that you're wrong.
Oh, okay.
And what would that prove? Okay, grow up, Kent.
Okay, you have said it about four times, the same thing over and over. You're determined to believe by faith that a Hesperornis, a bird with teeth, gave rise to the birds today without teeth because it lost its teeth.
No.
That's not logic.
If evolution is true, it would mean that organisms change over time. And we would see the evidence of that by seeing traits, either highly derived traits gradually appear, like the hominin fossils with our craniums growing larger, or we would see some traits disappear. Birds don't have teeth. That's a little bit odd because the terrestrial biosphere is full of animals with teeth. So it was proposed that birds specifically evolved from dinosaurs. And then if evolution is gradual change over time, we would see birds with teeth, but which makes them a little bit different from modern birds, but nonetheless still birds. Hesperornis is exactly that. It is the evidence, an example of the evidence we were looking for. It doesn't prove anything by itself, but it's evidence. There's no contradiction here.
Okay. Hesperornis is evidence of extinction, which is the opposite of what you need. It's the evidence of losing something,
required.
Which is the opposite of what you need. Where's the examples of some animal gaining something new? What if we found a bunch of fossil birds without teeth and that birds today had teeth? Would that also be evidence for your religion? I mean, for your theory?
If it was the other way around, if birds today have teeth and fossilized birds didn't have teeth, would that be evidence? Did I understand your question correct?
Right, yes. Would that be evidence for your evolution?
Yes, because it would mean change over time. So if we saw birds in the past that were different than birds of today, that would be evidence of change over time. So,
okay. So
congratulations on the own goal there.
Okay, now, here. Amoeba, single-celled creatures, do not have teeth. Many animals on this chart have teeth. So quite a few animals gain teeth. The amoeba didn't have any. So the fact that the amoeba doesn't have teeth is evidence for evolution, isn't it?
I would say that that's kind of dumb because the teeth thing is not really something that applies to unicellular organisms. Like terrestrial vertebrates do have teeth. And so that's a far more appropriate conjecture
gentlemen,
you can make, I guess.
We are kind of in bonus minutes. Did you want to shift into some closing statements, help us wrap up our thoughts, wrap up our points? We do have
plenty of audience questions.
We still have close to 600 in the live chat enjoying this exchange, the banter between you two. So
I'm okay with audience questions because, you know, people pay super chats to have those read. And, you know, we've been going for about an hour and a half. So I'm okay with going to that. I don't have a closing statement. I think the discussion speaks for itself. So,
okay. Did you guys want to? So I understand you don't want a closing statement, maybe because we just ended abruptly here. If you guys are happy with how the discussion went, we can go right to audience questions, or you guys can just give a quick summary, address anything you feel may have been left hanging for a minute or two. Kent, Eric, what would you guys prefer?
Yeah, just closing statements and then audience questions.
Okay, let's do first? Closing statements or just final words. We can do that. Sure. Eric, let's hand it to you. Take a couple minutes, 3 minutes, you know, I guess whatever you feel like you need. We'll do the same for Kat, and then we'll get into some audience questions. Go ahead.
I mean, it'll be super short. I mean, basically everything I said in my opening statement came true. We got no answers or explanations for anything. So that's my closing statement.
All right, short and sweet. Kent, we'll hand it to you. Take a couple minutes because I got to run to the restroom before we get into these questions.
I think everything I said came true also. I said that we live in two different worlds. In the real world, cows make baby cows. In the imaginary world of Planet Peterson, cows come from an amoeba over millions of years with slow changes that we can't see. We never see it happen, but we have to believe it happened by faith. He won't admit that it's a faith, but it isn't nothing but a faith. We've never seen an amoeba produce a non-amoeba. We've certainly never seen the billions of steps required to change an amoeba to a cow. We see variations within the kind. There's 450 recognized breeds of cows that probably had a common ancestor called a cow. That is science. That's the real world. In the real world, every type of animal you want to consider has variations, and there's limits. Farmers been trying to get bigger cows for a long time. I think they got a 2,700-pound cow now, the world's record. They're never going to get one that weighs 4 trillion tons. There is a limit somewhere in there. Have they reached it? I think they're probably pretty close at 2,700-pound cow. But somebody might get a 2,800-pound next week. I don't know. But there's a limit. The fact is there's a limit. Guys like Mr. Peterson will not admit, A, that there's a limit, that, yes, there's variations within the gene code. They will never admit that they really believe cows, fish, frogs, cats all have a common ancestor, and we should all be required to teach that. This is the whole point of the thing. I don't mind if he wants to have a religion. I don't mind people want to believe in evolution. Seriously, that doesn't bother me. It bothers me that they want all of us to pay that to be taught to the next generation of gullible kids. You live in a SpongeBob imagination world. Eric, you believe by faith. You imagine all these changes. And you imagine somehow something you found dead in the rocks is going to prove that. No fossil counts as evidence for your theory. None. All they prove is something died. You don't know that the Hesperornis gave rise to any birds today. There might have been a whole bunch of Hesperornises in the world, and they all died for some reason, like the dodo bird. Okay? Is that proof of something? Yeah, it's extinction. All you've given tonight is exactly what I said. You would show that you have a religious belief. We live on a planet. You do not want to answer the question where time, space, matter, or life came from, or energy. You want to just imagine. We already start with that. Just imagine that they could evolve. All you've done is demonstrated clearly you have a religion. And that's all you've got. And that's fine. Keep it. But I don't want to pay for it. And I'm going to fight it till I die. And my videos are going to keep fighting it for a long time after that. Okay? So I think the fact that God designed it is not a problem for me. I think it will be for you one day. I'd like to see you give your heart to the Lord and get saved. My computer's messing up here, brother.
Okay, anyway, gentlemen.
Johnny, you're back.
Yeah, we're good. Okay, guys, appreciate the closing statements and the exciting debate, fast-paced debate. I appreciate that. For those who will probably want to see more from these gentlemen, we do have another one coming up in a couple weeks' time, in October, early October. This time, there'll be more of a focus on the fossil record and the geologic column. So bigger picture questions there. And today we focused a lot on biology and genetics. So very good. Okay, let's get into some of these audience questions. We'll never be able to get through all of these, but we'll get through as many as we can. And it looks like we have a good mix of questions for the both of you, as we've had a good mix of views in the chat tonight. So here we go. Whoever gets the question gets the last word. So, for example, first question is for you. Eric, we'll let you respond. Kent can respond as well. If he wants to rebut something like that, he can do so. And then we would just throw it back to you for the final word. Dustin Buck, $10 super chat. Appreciate the support. Here's the question. If genetic similarity is the way we prove relation, then why cannot a monkey's heart be used in a human's body if we are so closely related? Go ahead.
If humans come from Adam and Eve, then how come sometimes humans reject organs that are donated? Like the idea that this was a gotcha is just is so preposterous. Human to human organ transplants don't always take because there are critical like antigen markers that our organs have on them and your body can reject them. So this wouldn't prove that evolution is false. Again, you could just turn this around and say Adam and Eve couldn't have existed. Humans can't be related because human-human organ transplants get rejected. Now, that's a dumb argument, and that's the point. So, not a great question.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Kent, over to you.
He evaded that one completely. the idea of animals, of transplanting organs at all is pretty incredible. Takes a bunch of really intelligent doctors to do such a thing, okay? Because every organ is so complex, it could not possibly have formed itself by chance. If there are similarities between the human heart and the monkey heart, and there probably are millions of similarities, I would say the same designer made them. But I'm not requiring everybody teach for my theory or philosophy or religion to be taught. Eric wants to require that everybody teach his. Humans and monkeys all came and are related to potatoes and all came from an amoeba-like creature over billions of changes. That's not science. I said that. I'll say it till I die. It's not science. It's a religious belief. He will never admit it.
Thank you, Kent. Eric, you get the last word if you'd like it.
No, I mean, I answered the question. I addressed it. So, I mean, you could just say, if God intelligently designed these organs, then why don't they work? It's such a bad question.
Okay, thank you for the responses, Eric and Kent. Next question is for you, Kent. Comes in from Mope35. If it took just 400 years for the, I think he probably means 4,000 years, for the thousands of species to emerge from only 8,000, why have they not observed to continue diversifying so fast for the past 100 years? Go ahead, Kent.
Excellent.
Well, I think it depends. You have to really define what you mean by some of the terms there. But I think we've seen that animal breeders like cows, for instance, farmers have been able to selectively breed creatures and get whole new varieties within just a few hundred years. New different kinds of plants like corn coming from maize. That was done because of farmers doing that over just a few hundred, maybe a thousand years or so. So we have developed lots of new varieties. Man has worked to develop them. Sometimes nature develops them by the climate. If it's too cold, only the dogs or animals with long, thick fur will survive. So when there's natural selection and there's artificial selection, both accomplish the same goal of creating new varieties. I think at a family, four generations of dog breeders, they were in my seminar one time, and one of the ladies said, oh yeah, our family, if you gave us just five or six, I think, generic mutts, pick some mutts out of the dog pound, we could selectively breed from those mutts over 100 years and create every breed of dog today. We can make a Chihuahua and a Great Dane and everything in between. So I think it certainly, for it to happen naturally in 4,400 years since Noah's flood, not a problem for me, to believe all those dogs came from soup, which came from a dot of nothing exploding, that's a big problem for the evolution. They believe all the dogs came from a dot of nothing exploding. That's dumb.
Thank you, Kent. Eric, over to you.
Yeah, this is a really good question because this is where Kent's worldview becomes testable. We take the arithmetic of how long it's been since that event and how many species were on the ark and how many we have today, do some really simple division, and it would tell us, on average, this many new species should be popping out of animals and plants and whatever. Well, it'd just be animals, I guess, on the ark, but whatever. We should see this many per day. Why don't we see that happening today? And I mean, Kent didn't even try to address that. He just said the Big Bang is false and evolution is false. So,
Okay, Kent, you get the last word.
I did address it. I said, and farmers do this all the time today. They create new varieties. I think if we can see it happening. There was no such thing as a Chihuahua at some point in human history. Somebody decided they wanted a lap dog, and so they had somebody selectively breed smaller, smaller, smaller. Now they have a teacup Chihuahua. All this has happened in my lifetime. A lot of this happened in my lifetime. Brand new varieties have been created by man artificially selecting what he wants. So if it can happen by artificial selection in a short human lifetime, then I think to say natural selection, or maybe even it was human artificial selection back 4,400 years ago. Maybe Noah decided he wanted cows that give more milk. So he selected those to breed and, you know, sold off or ate the rest of them. and pretty soon you got a herd of dairy cows. I think every farmer with an understanding of how genetics works would tell you, yeah, it's not hard. You can get cows that give more milk. My neighbor has a lot of cows. He's going to take some of our Zebus, take them to the market for us. He said, you don't need those. You need this Zebu right here to be the daddy of all the rest of them. So people who understand cows will say, yeah, you can selectively breed your cows and get a desired trait that you want. You want them to be gentle. You want them to be ferocious. Like, the, you know, some, they bred dogs to be ferocious. They bred dogs to be gentle. So this, yeah, it does happen in our lifetime. You can observe it. I did answer the question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the final word there, Kent. Next one for you, Eric, comes in from George Bond. Appreciate the support for tonight's debate there, George. Here's the question. A 4D quaternary code self-assembling into 64 codons that are arranged into prescriptive info and decision-making algorithms can't happen from rock soup. Information requires a sender and decision algorithms requires a forward planner. Feel free to speak to that, Eric.
It's not a question. This is, again, just this is question begging, circular reasoning, and an argument from incredulity. That life arose naturally. Nuh-uh, there's a code. The code needs a designer. How do I know that? Because codes are designed and have a designer. No, this isn't an argument. There's no evidence brought up here. It's not even a question. And it's complete question begging and circularity. So I don't, like, if I can attempt to address part of it, I guess, this whole thing about, like, information and algorithms, those are just abstractions that we attach to things. This whole thing about DNA being information, being code, or whatever, is, that is just a useful convention about the way we speak about things. It's not unique to DNA. Like, literally, you can say that a hydrogen atom has coded information in it because its electron informs you about its chemical properties. Now, why does nobody make that argument? Because they're not trying to look at that to assert the conclusion that they already have in mind. When you press them on this, they sometimes capitulate and say, like, oh yeah, that's design too. So, I mean, there's nothing here. It's not even a question. So I don't even know what I'm supposed to say, but.
Thank you, Eric. Kent, any thoughts on that?
Well, I would say the code from the 64 codons that you can get from the quaternary code of CATG is really phenomenal. And you do have to have something to assemble the code, something to read the code. We have a code in English, 26 letters. I'm holding a book by Charlie Darwin here. I bet I could read this and my brain could process. It's nothing but ink on paper, but it's actually more than that. This ink on paper is carrying information. In this case, stupid information, but it's carrying information. And I have a mechanism to read it, digest it, understand it. And so I think that the body, to take the DNA code that's in every cell and be able to use that to do things like digestion and cell replication and healing and balance and vision, is phenomenal. I don't have a problem worshiping God for his amazing creation. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you, Kent. And go ahead, if you'd like the last word on it, you can, Eric.
Sure. Literally everything about the way DNA works, it's literally just physical chemistry, non-miraculous physical chemistry. It doesn't require a magical beginning or explanation to describe how it got here.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. All right. Here we go. Next question from The Wizard Show. Wade the Wizard, who had plenty of debates with you, Kent, and he's got a question for you. You claim that all life is intelligently designed. Can you please explain how you determine if something is designed?
I think there's all of human history and all of intuition would give us lots of experience with that. If I'm walking through the gravel pit here in Lenox, Alabama, and I find an arrowhead, I would have to conclude this is designed for a purpose, okay? It's got the notches in it and it can tie to a stick or something to make an arrow. I think even finding an arrowhead amongst the gravel would be intuitive. It had a designer. If you're walking down the highway and you find a penny laying on the highway, you would automatically conclude that happened by chance in a copper mine. No, you would conclude somebody designed it. So I think, I don't know that there's a simple answer to that question, but I think it's obvious to a four-year-old what is designed and what isn't in almost all cases. Do you think a single cell, by the way, Wade, I'll debate you again anytime. Please bring it on. Come visit Dinosaur Adventureland. You can sit right here and have the debate. Okay. But you can even bring your hat. I think that it's just intuitive at all levels that, hey, this had to be designed. A penny has to be designed. A pencil had to be designed. These things don't happen in nature. All of our human experience through all of human history is, it's easy to tell if something was made or something is just natural, like like my gravel pit here. We got trillions of rocks. If I find an arrowhead, I'll know right away that was designed. Now, if you can't figure out it was designed, I can't help you there. Okay.
Thank you, Kat. Eric, over to you.
I mean, Kent didn't give us an explanation for how he thinks anything is designed there. I didn't hear one, at least. I got a little distracted because our screens are all blank on my end. So I was trying to figure out if my computer glitched or something. But yeah, this whole thing about design, it's just completely circular. Everything is designed. How do we know that? Because it has to be designed to be the way it is. Therefore, it's designed. I mean, if Kent could like point to something that isn't designed and then something that is in nature and then specifically describe to us how he knows one is and one isn't, and then that would be interesting, but you can't point to an engine because we already know that the engine is designed, I guess. So yeah.
And before you respond, Eric, can you see us now or is it still glitching?
No, everything is, I can see the questions. It's just that our little boxes where our faces are, that's a blank.
I did just check the live show. It is showing up. So it could be on your end.
Yeah.
But as long as you can see the questions, we're good. And Kent, go ahead. You get the last word.
Well, I think Eric unknowingly gave the same answer that I said before. We know how DNA works. It doesn't explain the origin of it. We know how engines work. That doesn't explain the origin of it. We know how pencils work. That will not explain the origin of it. We know how arrowheads are supposed to look. That doesn't explain the origin. There has to be a designer for an arrowhead. There's a designer for the pencil. His circular reasoning, this is what he's been doing all night. He starts off saying, we know evolution is true. Therefore, let's look for evidence to support it. You don't know evolution is true. Stop right there. You kept saying, well, if birds evolved, stop. Your first three words are wrong. You don't know birds evolved, and they didn't evolve.
That's why I said if. I didn't say they are. I said
that's
if.
Right. It is like,
how are you? This
reasoning.
Is phenomenally Eric, basic logic and English.
It is and you have circular reasoning all evening. You start with the assumption evolution is true. Now let's look for evidence for our theory. If it doesn't match your theory, we'll say, well, we don't know yet, but we're going to find it. Okay. But that to be taught like science. It's not science, Eric. You have a religious belief. It's a really dumb one in my humble, really humble, totally unbiased opinion. But you're welcome to it. So the question tonight, I've lost the question. It didn't matter. Okay. I gave my final answer.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Next question, and looks like it's just a question for both of you. So comes in from Frank Furter 63, $20 super chat. Appreciate the support for tonight's event. So here's the question. How come human beings still have Neanderthal chromosomes in our genes? So in other words, since it's a question for the both of you, you can think of it as which model best accounts for that? Eric, let's start. Or you know what, Kent, we'll start with you.
Well,
since you just had the last...
he did the last one though.
Yeah, but
since it's a question for both, you'll want to get the last word, Eric, because Kent just had the last word. So since it's just for both of you, there'll just be two responses. So let's have Kent start, then you can have the last word.
Okay, I get you.
Well, the question has a built-in assumption. Do we have DNA like Neanderthals? I think the Neanderthals were simply humans that were living longer because the eyebrow ridge continues to grow, the occipital bun continues to grow. I think they're just normal humans, only a great age. And the Bible teaches before the, you know, right after the flood, people still lived to be 300 or 400. Before the flood, it was 900. So the Neanderthals might be just somebody who drowned in the flood. I don't think there's any relation to an ape. So we probably have similar DNA if we have some, if, like I said, there's an assumption built into the question. But if we have similar DNA, again, why is there similar lines of code in this book and this book, you know, and all the books that I have in my library? That's the code with which you write English. So, of course, there are similarities, maybe even identical sentences in some of them. Could be whole paragraphs are identical. That's not evidence of no designer.
Thank you, Kat. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, the Neanderthal thing. I mean, creationists have thrown out a bunch of really desperate cockamamie explanations for Neanderthals, like that they were just humans with rickets. We know that that's not the case. Neanderthals have enough diagnosable differences, like in their skeletons, that we know that they were subspecies of humans. For example, Neanderthals don't have a chin. Homo sapiens are actually, we're the only hominids that ever developed a chin. So if you look at the mandible, the bottom part of it sort of flares outward a little bit. That's what I mean by a chin. Neanderthals don't have that. Homo ergaster didn't have that. Homo erectus didn't have that. So on and so forth. But as we are subspecies are generally always, there's genetic compatibility. So we have Neanderthal DNA in our genes, not chromosomes, but DNA in our genes, because we would have interbred with them. And we find that the Neanderthals lived in a different place. That's how they diversified and speciated. You have to have geographical isolation for that. And Homo sapiens developed in another place, in Africa. But eventually, populations of humans that left Africa intermingled with these Neanderthals, had some babies. That DNA is still in us, but that DNA is completely absent in people from Africa whose ancestors have always lived in Africa. So that's how it got there.
Okay, thank you, Eric. All right, next one is for you, Kent. Silent Acoustics, $20 super chat, appreciate the support. Kent, the scientific method is objective and fluid, whereas religion is incapable of evolving, understanding, and is biased. Don't you think science is our best chance at solving problems and understanding our world?
Obviously a couple of assumptions built into that question. I love science. The scientific method is observation. Is it observable, testable, demonstrable? Definition of science from the Latin word seer, to know. We know cows produce cows. We know that. We watch it. People have it all the time. We know you can get varieties of cows. We know there appear to be limits. 280 pounds a day is the most milk cows ever given. That's the world's record. There's a limit. Why don't they give 10 trillion tons a day? There's a limit somewhere. We do not know that cows are related to potatoes and that cows evolved from a protozoa. We don't know that. So I love science. Now, but the problem is evolution has the religion of evolution has been so thoroughly mixed into science. People think it's part of science. I say beer is often sold at football games. Beer has nothing to do with football, and it doesn't become athletic by association. And evolution does not become science by association with science. The fact that it's mixed into the books is not evidence of anything. I think you'd find Hitler had a lot of propaganda in his books mixed in with real stuff, real science. Hitler, Nazi propaganda. Don't go to North Korea. They got all kinds of stuff, propaganda mixed into their books. Evolution is propaganda. It's a religion mixed into science. So I think religion is incapable of evolving. I think people change their beliefs all the time. It's biased. I'm willing to look at any evidence. I've not seen any evidence tonight other than it must have happened long ago and far away. That's not evidence. That's a belief. You believe somehow long ago and far away, the amoeba slowly turned. Oh, I got it. Slowly turned into everything. This is not science. This whole chart is nothing but propaganda and religion. Even if it later is proven to be true, at this point in history, as of 2024, none of this has been proven. It's all speculation. This is a religious belief. So religion is in this. Too many things in here, I think, are need more explanation for the question to be any good. I don't know that it's biased. I think evolution is biased. He's his whole night now. You know, we know evolution happened, so therefore, blah, blah, blah. I think teaching science is wonderful. I love science. I taught science 15 years. I'll take a quiz on anybody, against anybody, on most of the facts of science. We know dogs produce dogs. We know that. We do not know dogs and potatoes are related. That's a religion. That's a belief. So solving problems, I think we should understand our world. I think the best understanding of the world is, wow, the best understanding of this pencil. Somebody had to design this. Who did it? Where? I don't know yet. I could find out probably, but I know somebody designed it. I don't think we need to know all the things about the world, but I think I love studying the world. I taught it for years, and I love studying this world. It's amazing. I love studying anatomy and biology and physics. I love studying that stuff. And evolution has nothing to do with science. Nothing.
Thank you, Kent. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm it was a remarkable shock to me that Kent said that in the future, evolution might be proven to be true. I thought Kent would just forever and always proclaim that evolution is false, that we know it's false, and then it can't be true. So props to you, Kent, for that. The whole thing about... I have to comment on this. Kent's phenomenally basic, rudimentary grasp of how science and English works is just incredible. The way you say that an if-then statement is circular reasoning, I have such secondhand embarrassment that you do that. Science is a way of doing things. It proposes hypotheses, and those hypotheses are like if-then statements. It's not stating the conclusion. You may believe that your hypothesis is true, but you have to test it. So you go out and look for the evidence. So if evolution is circular reasoning, then literally all forms of science are circular reasoning, according to Kent. If gravitational waves exist, then we should be able to build a LIGO detector and find them with the laser that shoots at perpendicular angles. Well, that's just... You're just begging the question. That's circular reasoning. I just need to point that out to the audience, how utterly ridiculous that is.
Kent, go ahead. You can have the last word.
I didn't follow most of what he said. I don't think he did either.
That's surprising.
I don't think he did either. So science is, look up the definition of science. It's not a way of knowing. It's a knowing based on observation, experimentation, and testing. You guys want to change the definition of science so that your religion matches it. It's not a way of knowing. I like science. Okay. Show me an observation where any animal produced something other than its same kind. And now there's 26 definitions of species. If you want to go species, show me where did something make a new species? That's my whole point all evening. Evolution is something you believe. And you won't admit it. You believe.
Okay. Thank you, Kat. That one was for Kent, so this one's for you, Eric. Zachary, $20 super chat. Appreciate it. Planet Peterson, assuming you are highly logical, if you know there is zero evidence, the material world has never been observed, writing one iota of DNA code de novo, how can you believe it is a natural process? Any thoughts on that, Eric?
Speaking of having a tenuous grasp of the English language, what the hell is this? So there is no evidence that DNA has ever manifested itself from the environment all on its own. How can I believe that it's a natural process? Is that my best attempt at trying to figure out what the answer to this question is. So in evolution, we and origin of life, which isn't the same thing, but whatever, people treat it like it's the same thing. Life would have originated once on this planet. So the idea that it would be popping up today also just isn't built into the assumption. But in the chemical environment where the cycles that eventually produced the first living things, whether they're cellular or viral or whatever, that environment would obviously be highly competitive. So if the same sort of process, the same sort of process is going on today, but those chemicals and whatever products are being produced there, those are going to be competing with life that is established, that got established long ago. So those materials would be used up. So it's really not all that surprising that we don't find like DNA or RNA self-replicating in the oceans separate from life. But we have found, I'm not sure about nucleotides. I mean, I could Google it real quick. But we have found we've found every single amino acid, for example, just in meteors and asteroids before. So a quick Google search just told me all five nucleobases that make up DNA and RNA have been detected in meteorite samples. So are we going to have a goalpost shift here? Does that not count because it's not DNA inside of a living thing doing stuff? Well, apparently the DNA molecule exists in nature separate from life. So there we go.
Okay, over to you, Kat.
Okay, well, there is zero evidence that the material world has ever produced one piece of a DNA code. If you wish to believe it, which you do believe by faith it happened, okay, admit it's a belief. But the code is so complex, I don't think it could have happened without a designer. I think if I examine any book in my library, I would find it is ink on paper, almost without exception. But the ink is arranged in a certain way to carry a code. The DNA is not just molecules, okay? It's arranged in a very specific way to carry information. This ink on paper is arranged in very special design called letters of the alphabet. And then the letters are arranged in very special called words, which are arranged in sentences and paragraphs. And so it's a really complex system to take ink on paper and make a code out of it. For the DNA to have this CATG in certain sequence and carry information is amazing. I don't think it could happen by chance. Quite a few times tonight, Eric has said, we have found, we know, we found, we form. You didn't do any of that. What do you mean we? White man. Okay.
White man?
As far
man.
As finding. That was a joke from the other night at my seminar. Sorry.
Okay. I think you're white, Ken.
I'm not. I'm brown. But the meteor samples, if they contain these elements that you're saying that they contain, do you know that it came from outer space and headed out there? Did it pick it up on the way through the atmosphere? Did it pick it up when it hit the ground? You don't know that it started that way in outer space. Do you know that the meteor didn't start from the Earth with an explosion, a volcano, or even the fountains of the deep breaking open? We don't know those things, but I'm just saying, in a court of law, I don't think that would hold up as proof enough to convict somebody that the DNA, the meteor, contains the elements for DNA. What this is an attempt to shift the goalpost to say, well, we don't know how life started here, so it must have been brought here from somewhere else. That's not an answer. That's shifting the goalpost.
Well, I never made that claim. I don't believe in panspermia or anything like that.
Yeah, good. We finally found something we agree on.
Yeah. I mean, we have found DNA separate from life. So, like, you can claim, well, what if the meteor actually started here on Earth and it went up and then it just came down? Again, what if unicorn farts? But is that the best explanation? I don't think so. So we'll just move on to the next one.
Okay, so this is a two-parter right here. Looks like it's one for you, one for Kat. Bridge the Divide, $5 super chat. Eric, did you explain how CTVT debunks his kind assertion? And Kent, do you believe faith is an epistemological tool? Epistemology being, from my understanding, the study of how we know something. Yeah. And Eric, do you know what CTVT is?
I do. Kent, do you know what CTVT is? Canine transmissible.
It's been 200 years ago that I heard about that, and not something I can quickly call to mind, so I could look it up.
Sure. It never got brought up, but it's canine transmissible venereal tumor. So, when you say dogs always produce dogs or whatever, a dog is not a unicellular parasite, right? But canine transmissible venereal tumor is. It's a cancerous tumor that comes from dogs, but it's separate from the dogs. The chromosomes are so completely different. And because it's cancerous, it functions as a single-celled thing that just makes copies and it grows as this cancerous tissue. Now, it requires a host, but it's still a living thing. Any parasite is still a living thing, even though they can't exist without a host. So canine transmissible venereal tumor comes from dogs, but it isn't a dog. So that's the general point.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And then your question, Kent, about faith and epistemology.
Yes, I think that we have a great deal of faith involved in a lot of things that we do research on. If I dig a hole in the ground and I, like here in our gravel pit, we find gravel, sand, clay, gravel, sand, clay. We find a sequence all over the place. We find the same sequence all the way to North Carolina. gravel, sand, clay, gravel, sand, clay. We have seven layers of gravel here. I think by faith, I could move over 5 feet, dig another hole, and find the same thing. I don't know. I didn't dig the hole yet. But I think faith is part of science and learning. If we see two cars collide at a certain velocity and everybody dies, we could conclude if it happens again, the same thing would happen. But I didn't see it. I don't have to see it happen every time. I think, yeah. So if I understand the question right, I think faith is important. Certainly, Eric demonstrated a lot of his faith tonight. He believes somehow long ago and far away, a single-celled creature could learn how to do something that no single-celled creature today could do. He said, life originated only once, and it can't happen again. Well, that's great faith and a real handy cop-out. There's plenty of scientists in the laboratory. Do it again. Make it happen. Make life in the laboratory.
All right. Let's give Kent the last word there, and then now you can have the last word on this one, Eric. So, and I think this will be the last question we get to, and I think we did pretty good on these questions. So for those who didn't get their question answered, stay tuned for round two between Eric and Kent. Maybe you'll get your question there. So two-part question, one for each of you. Nathan KB, $10 super chat. Appreciate the support. Kent, let's start with you. And for Kent, do you believe in sola scriptura? Not really the topic, but we'll give you the opportunity to answer. And for you, Eric, if evolution is true, why do you exist? Kent, let's start with you.
Well, remind me of the Latin. Sola scriptura means only the scripture.
Right. Any doctrines that a Christian would hold to are based on scripture alone.
I'd have to be cautious answering that one. I do believe the scripture is true and preserved and written by God and inspired by God, written by man. And I think it's true every verse. I think Satan's tried to twist it ever since the beginning, you know, from God hath said to hath God said. And he's twisting it today with all the Bible perversions. But no, there's more ways to know than just scripture. Okay, we know the acceleration of gravity has nothing to do with scripture. We know that from physical experiments. You know, but I don't know for sure what he's driving at there. I do believe the scripture is absolutely true. I believe it's true about the future too, Eric. You're going to die and face God one day. Maybe that doesn't bother you. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Kent. Eric, over to you.
If evolution is true, why do I exist? So, why did the vase fall off the shelf? Because an earthquake happened. That's a way you can explain cause and effect for a why. Or maybe by why they mean what is the reason or purpose. Like there's like a teleological aspect to this. I don't believe that the universe has a teleology. I don't think I exist for an eternal future after I die. But even if that were true, I can imagine an infinite number of different afterlives. So like Kent's cute, vague threat against me and what's going to happen after I die. Kent has no idea that the boogeyman isn't really God and that the boogeyman has one rule. All people named Kent Hovind go to hell forever. He has no idea if that's the case or not. It's not provable. There's also no good reason to believe it. So I would say for Kent, like the same reason he's not scared of the boogeyman afterlife is the same reason I'm not scared about his afterlife.
Okay, I'm going to sneak this one in. I almost forgot. It comes in from Pi 3.14, $20 super chat. Appreciate the support. It's for you, Planet Peterson. We have between 24 and 273 species going extinct each day. How long will evolution take to replace these?
The idea that we know what the rate of speciation is just like pretty silly. In environments where niches open up, you see this also this happens like with technology and in the market, right? When cell phones first became a thing, the market was flooded with huge numbers of different kinds of cell phones. Whereas today, everybody pretty much has a Samsung phone or an iPhone. There are a few others, but that's about it. We saw this with airplanes in the early 20th century and auto manufacturers. There were, like Kent probably knows about this because I think he said his dad was like an engineer or something like that. There were huge numbers of them, but then eventually, you know, we just have the few that we have today. But anyways, sorry. I like to do tangents like that. But there's no such thing as the rate of speciation after extinction events and things like that, or when a new niche is exploited or when a new environment is sort of available for organisms, they diversify because there are lots of niches that can be fit in that environment. But other times, if you have stability, then there's this concept called stabilizing selection, which is kind of like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So some organisms in some environments that are stable, there's no need for a high rate of speciation or even evolution of really any kind, because if it's natural selection and survival of the fittest, if the environment isn't undergoing dramatic changes, then the organisms that live there fit well in that environment, and there isn't selective pressure to change. I mean, even Kent would agree with that, because I know Kent doesn't believe in evolution to the extent that I do, but he agrees that natural selection is a thing that acts on animals, so, and plants and whatever else.
Thank you, Eric. Kent, any thoughts on that one?
I'm curious where the numbers came from. How many go extinct every day? I wouldn't question that there certainly are creatures going extinct as far as we know. It's hard to prove the extinction of anything, like I said. But let's assume this number is true. Pick a number. 200 species go extinct. The question, how long will it take evolution to replace those is a really a good question. He believes, by faith, that every kind of creature in the world, all of them, came about by evolution. The ostrich, the human, the dinosaur, the sunflower, all of them came about by random chance from a single cell creature of some kind, which came from a warm little pond, which came from hot rocks cooling down. This is a religious belief, and I think you misunderstood me. Even if this later proves to be true, and I don't think it ever will be, none of these lines on this paper represent science. They represent imagination. So how long will it take evolution to replace them? Getting a new variety of potato or a new variety of a crow, there are 6 varieties of crows now. They might have had a common ancestor called a crow. And it could be a new niche opens up where, oh, a crow that's able to, you know, skinny beak crow might, you know, still a crow, still got a beak. So I think the variations we see are all still within what the Bible would consider the same kind. There's no examples. And we talked about there's no good definition of species, but there are no examples of evolution happening today. We see variations happening of the same kind. That's all. And you talked about genes quite a bit through this last 2 hours. I better go potty or I'm going to change my genes.
Eric, you get the last word, and that's it for the questions.
Nothing Kent said there really had much to do with the question, and I answered the question to the best of my ability, so I don't really need to say anything else.